I mean, fast forward, when I got in the laundry industry, I started calling laundry owners all over the country and actually going and meeting them. And it blew my mind. Like, actually, Randy Crone in Des Moines, Iowa, I went there with a distributor and I am talking to him for over an hour. And at one point, he actually apologized to me because he had to go to a different meeting. And I'm like, this guy just gave me an hour of his time and apologized that he's cutting it short that I didn't even have a meeting with.
Welcome to the Planet Laundry Podcast, brought to you by Planet Laundry, the magazine of the Coin Laundry Association. This episode of the Planet Laundry Podcast is sponsored by Sense. Sense is the leading business management system built for laundromat operators to enhance operations, gain insights, and drive business growth. Offering a suite of tools, including advanced point of sale, on-machine payment systems, order tracking, powerful reporting, and payment processing, the most successful laundromats run on Sense. With tax season upon us, the team wishes you a smooth and seamless filing process. The team has provided a workbook to help you understand deductions and exemptions specific to the laundry industry. Download the guide at trisense.com/tax. That's trisense.com/tax. And enjoy this episode of the podcast. This is the Planet Laundry Podcast. I'm your host and the editor of Planet Laundry Magazine, Bob Neiman. Today, I'm with a multi-store operator from Omaha, Nebraska. He's been called an industry maverick. He's certainly an entrepreneurial spirit in every sense of the word. He's all over the internet these days with his YouTube channel, as well as other social platforms. So I'm thrilled today to be with Peter Mayberry of Anytime Laundry. Hey, Peter, thanks for taking time to be on the podcast today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here. This magazine really helped me in this industry, so I'm happy to give a little back.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear it. Again, excited to have you here. I know that everybody's path into the industry is a little bit different. As far as I know, you weren't born into the industry as maybe a second generation or third generation operator. You kind of came into it after living life a little bit. So can you bring us up to speed as far as your professional background and how long have you finally made its way into the picture?
Yeah, so, I mean, I grew up on a farm on an Indian reservation, actually, in Winnebago, Nebraska. And, you know, from there, I went to college. I ended up getting a job at General Electric, and I was an area manager. And as an area manager, I did peer-to-peer sales, so I sold to a lot of electrical contractors. So I spent a lot of my time actually dealing with other business owners. And I guess, I mean, I think people are probably familiar with Indian reservations. There's a lot of poverty there. We didn't have a lot of money. So I guess I was probably at a position in my life where I thought that, you know, if you grew up in poverty, you could try and climb a little higher and make a little bit better life for yourself. But there's probably limits. But then I actually started, we just want to fast forward. Like one of my closest friends actually grew up in a trailer. He had such a tumultuous life that, his mother ended up choosing a man over him when he was young and actually kicking him out. So he was homeless as a child that was still school aged. Right. And ironically, he told me that he would sleep in laundromats because for shelter, which is, I mean, that's true. But I mean, that's not where I'm going with the story. But
yeah,
I see this guy whose mother basically chose another man and all this other stuff. And he had every reason in his life to just say, you know what, this is the cards that were dealt me. So I'm just going to do whatever, maybe crime. I don't know. But instead, like, he went to work for somebody that he ended up buying the company from, and then he built the company into one of the largest electrical contractors in the city of Omaha. And I'm like, I mean, if this guy can do it, mm-hmm. I mean, why can't I? And I started seeing other business owners that also maybe didn't come from nothing but came from meager means, and they ended up building these companies that are great companies. So I'm like, it's not out of reach. And then when you actually talk to these people, you learn how they did it, and then you get five or six people that have done this, and like you kind of try and figure out which is a strategy that's going to be good for you, and then you start executing it.
Right, right. It's just that simple, but it's not. But
it's not. But it's like I said, it's people. I mean, people will share. I mean, even when I was starting into like just, I didn't know laundry was going to be the business I went into. I just knew I wanted to start a business and I wanted to control my own destiny. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I went through car washes. I thought about doing a hotel. I mean, it was a whole gamut of stuff. But I actually even called a guy named Ray Anderson, who owns Anderson Food Shots, which is a large gas station franchise here in the Midwest. And I ended up talking to Rainers himself, and I was trying to buy some land because at that time I wanted to do a car wash, and he had a gas station where he owned the land next to it. And I even wanted to do something where maybe I could, he could sell the car washes at his pump and I give him a dollar, whatever. I was kind of pitching this to him, and he tells me that I can't do it. And I said, why not? You won't sell me the land? And he said, no, you can't do it because it's not zoned for it. He said, matter of fact, I couldn't put that gas station there today. And I said, well, how's it there? He said, I put it there before it was zoned for it. And then so I had no idea what even zoning was. And this man spoke to me for over an hour and was telling me all this stuff about zoning and how to work with the city and how to get things. I mean,
right.
A guy he had never met. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess he just had time, and he just shared it all with me. And like, I mean, it was one of the most valuable conversations I had. And it actually also taught me that you can call business owners. So I mean, fast forward, when I got in the laundry industry, I started calling laundry owners all over the country and actually going and meeting them. And it blew my mind. Like, actually, Randy Crone in Des Moines, Iowa, I went there with a distributor and I ended up talking to him for over an hour. And at one point, he actually apologized to me because he had to go to a different meeting. And I'm like, this guy just gave me an hour of his time and apologized that he's cutting it short that I didn't even have a meeting with.
Yeah. People are willing to share, aren't they? More so than you may think.
I share with people all the time. Like I said, I become a little bit more picky because some people don't actually have any desire or the ability to take the step or even the drive to. But if someone's serious, I actually probably talk more to people now that own one laundry that are trying to expand, mm-hmm. you know, and that way, you know, you're not wasting your time because they've already done one. So they're right. Obviously serious about trying to do more. So,
right.
Like I said, I mean, you could waste your whole day if you allowed it, but there's a balance. But there are times that people will get my number that are not in the industry. Matter of fact, there's one guy, I can't think of his name right now, Mike something. Mm-hmm. I want to say up in Oregon. He caught me one day in the car, and I don't even know how I got my number, but he raised bees, and he was wanting to get in the laundry industry. And I talked to him, and sure as shit, he's in the laundry industry now. He was a guy that it wasn't a waste of my time. He's doing it.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we all have different paths into the business, and certainly talking to people, it helps kind of shorten that learning curve. How did laundry find its way onto your radar? How did you actually end up in the laundromat industry? What attracted you to it?
So I was actually looking up passive businesses because I also was an area manager at GE. So I knew it was something I couldn't give all my time to, which I would say the laundry industry can be. At this point, it's passive for me, but it's not really when you start out. But mm-hmm. there was a guy in New York, Carl Hendricks. So I was Googling all this stuff and somehow I stumbled across Carl Hendricks, who I actually had only just met like a couple years ago. It's funny because he definitely had an influence on me without even meeting him.
Right. Distributor in New York, right?
Yeah. And he had a
HK Laundry. Yeah.
What's that?
HK Laundry.
Yeah, that's it. HK Laundry.
Yeah.
So he had a Performa, which, I mean, obviously standard with distributors, but at that time I was too new to even know what a distributor was. And he had that Performa that he just had on his website. And I'm looking at this thing and it had the turns per day. And I'm like, you know, I think at like four turns a day, the laundry was doing pretty decent on the Performa. So then I'm like Googling, like, what is the average turn on laundromats? And it's like 3.5. And I'm like, holy cow, if you can be better than average, you could make this kind of money. So I really dove in and a good friend of mine still today is Danny D'Angelo. I got in with Danny D'Angelo and I do like Danny D'Angelo, but
yeah,
him and I go about laundry acquisition differently. I've had the free ones and right. I've sold the free ones.
Yeah.
I like to build them.
Right.
Or I like to take over one that I have to pay for that's in the right area and make it way better than it's doing. But anyway, mm-hmm. Danny obviously did play a part. He was influential. Like I said, I do like Danny, but I do not follow Danny's methods today.
Well, but, yeah, go ahead.
But I said, like, that was it. I actually am not a person that wanted to leave my job. Matter of fact, when I did decide I had to either do laundries or GE, it was a tough decision. And mm-hmm. like, I was a guy that loved going to work. Like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the people I worked with. I enjoyed what I did. Like, I did not hate my job, but mm-hmm. it just got to a point where there's only so many hours in a day. And it was, if I was going to keep going with laundry, I couldn't serve both masters.
Right. Right. Well, in those early days of entrepreneurship, was laundry your first business that you struck out on your own, or were there other businesses that you did before that?
It was the first business that I, yes, it was okay. The first business that, well, I mean, I Bitcoin mined. I mean, I'm one of the original Bitcoin millionaires, which actually helped me.
Helped in
I mean, I own all my buildings, and I probably would not have been in a place to purchase the property along with the laundry on the first one if it wasn't for the money I made on Bitcoin.
Right, right. Okay, all right. Well, who helped you along the way in those early days of getting into the laundry business? You mentioned Danny, you mentioned Carl Heinrich. Any other folks?
Yeah, it was John Olson that was working at Laundry Lux, and I was reaching out to distributors, and I ended up getting in touch with John Olson because they didn't have an Electrolux distributor at the time in Omaha. So I actually did things probably, I think a lot of people would probably fail the way I started in the laundry industry. And the only reason that I didn't fail is probably because of the contacts and connections I had already made, even not being in the industry, and the fact that my background was in construction. But like I actually built my first laundromat. I mean, I hired an architect. I converted a building into a laundry. I actually poured the slabs with limestone concrete. I mean, I myself and some other people actually mounted all the laundry equipment. And like I said, just watching YouTube videos and different stuff and reading installation manuals. And like I did the whole thing from cradle to grave. I mean, John Olson helped me with the layout. Other than that, I did tweak it because, I mean, I went to laundromats and just saw choke points. Matter of fact, I'll actually tell you two people that really helped me, which one of them I've never even spoke to, but and it was a shame that they kind of went away with this on the forums. But Ben Gottlieb and Larry Amsky used to fight tooth and nail. And the interesting thing was is that they both made excellent points. And they would fight over everything. And you could actually see, I mean, matter of fact, one of the reasons I'm quarter dollar coin and a card on a lot of my laundromats. They're all card now just because we can't scale without doing card only. But the fact is, I started out because, I mean, they're both arguing, like one's arguing dollar coin, other people are arguing cards and quarters. And I'm like, shit, you can have all three. Why not offer your customers everything?
Right. Every option you can. Yeah.
And I actually used to try and stir shit up between them. I mean, people went back in those old forums. I would literally like throw grenades just knowing if I got those two fired up that there'd be a huge debate and I could learn from a lot of people because people would jump into it too. Right. So you could actually learn. Like I said, the maddest thing I am about that forum is that they started wanting to be kumbaya and don't say bad things. Like I'll tell you right now, when people fought on that for new people like me, that was absolutely gold. And it wasn't because they were fighting and taking shots at each other. It was just that they were defending, like they would say something and then someone would attack them and they would defend their point. Then the other guy would defend their point. And like, so you're seeing all the negatives and all the positives and it's just brutal. And like I said, the thing that I always thought was stupid is everybody was so damn worried about Ben and Larry. I mean, if those two didn't give a shit and those two weren't butthurt, then why did everybody else care?
Right.
Oh, he's attacking him. Who gives a shit? Right. You're not the one being attacked. And the guy being attacked isn't crying.
Right, right. You're getting the pros and the cons and the advantages and disadvantages.
People attack me. I don't lose sleep over it, so I don't know why anybody would care.
Right, right, right. Yeah, no, good stuff. And certainly there was, like you said, there was a lot of great information out there, certainly in the past and out there still, too, just in different platforms.
I remember being on Christmas break in Indiana or Texas, I think my mother-in-law's house. Yeah. And I actually read through the forums. I bet you I spent 6 hours a day going through just everything. Like, I mean, coin drops. I didn't know what coin drops to buy. I mean, like I said, there's arguments on that. Everything. I mean, there's so much stuff. Changers. Right. You know, like, I mean, I literally made a whole list of everything I wanted to put in my laundromat based on arguments on a forum.
Right, right.
And talking to my people, you know, I mean, obviously, too, I'd gotten to know some owners. But yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of homework you have to do, though. Like you said, 6 hours, 7 hours, just digging in deep on, you know, some of the minutiae of the store. Absolutely. At least in the beginning. Well, how many stores do you have now, Peter? What are you up to?
So we have 9 operating stores. I have 2 that I own the buildings that we're just dealing with state and local issues to try and get permitting done. And actually, no shit, I just went and got a $50,000 earnest check today because I'm buying another building, actually a Wells Fargo Bank building in Lincoln, Nebraska. Okay. So we have 9 running. Oh, we have 10. I always forget about Kansas. We got one started in Kansas. We have 9 in Omaha, 1 in Kansas. There'll be 2 more in Kansas, and then we're going to have 1 in Lincoln. So right now we have 10. 10 laundromats, final answer. We have 2 that we will have shortly, and then a 13th that as soon as I drop this check off, we'll be under contract.
Okay. 10 up and running and always looking for more, and you got several. You got a couple in the pipeline too. So with that, what do you look for at a laundry location? What are some things? What do you look for? And more importantly, what's non-negotiable for you? What would make you walk away from a site or a deal?
The thing that I look for, first and foremost, and I think that people are idiots if they don't do it, it's location. I mean, if you have a great location, and there's a lot of factors, and that is like people per square mile apartments. I mean, there's
yeah, what does that mean? Does that mean, location?
So when I look at a location, the number one reason that I eliminate almost all locations, because I find things that are absolutely perfect demographic locations, but I eliminate the majority. I would say that I probably eliminate at least 9 out of 10 properties on parking. If they don't have adequate parking, there's nothing I can do to make it work. I mean, I can't build a 5,000 square foot store with 4 parking stalls. I mean, it just doesn't, you can't get the customers in there.
Is there a rule of thumb as far as parking? How many spaces per square foot, or what's your rule of thumb on that?
I used to say 22, but like I said, I don't even know if that's enough. Like now I like to even have more than that. Cause I have a location that does very well, but matter of fact, I've tried to buy the house behind it to tear it down to put parking in. And I know that if I could get more parking in that location, that laundromat would grow. I'm pigeonholed in one location, and it does have 22 stalls, but it's just not enough. It's not enough. And I mean, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll buy that house one day. I'll tear it down and I'll add 10 more parking stalls. But I'd also say, like, a lot of people don't do this. And I'll even say this because everybody will tell me you can't do this anyway. They always have. But I'm one of the only guys that doesn't actually work in my laundromat. So everybody always tells me I'm wrong. But I pick stores next to large grocery chains. I mean, I have a lot of stores next to large grocery chains. I mean, they don't build large grocery chains everywhere. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that I think that most people only travel a mile to do laundry. But if the closest grocery store is 2.5 miles from you, you're going to have to use that grocery store. And if you got your laundry, I mean, you see it every day. I mean, you're seeing it every week. So, I mean, I got free advertising because they park in the parking lot, and I'm an outbuilding that I'm usually a standalone. I mean, I own some strip centers. I'm usually a standalone building in that, like, matter of fact, the building I'm sitting right now, just behind me is a giant Hy-Vee store. And the rest of it is just apartment buildings. Like, they're all using this Hy-Vee. And they may not use it every... They may drive to a Walmart for sometimes a week, but if they need quick eggs, they're not going to a Walmart. They're going to go over here. Like, they're always here. Like, even if this isn't their primary store, they're using it. So, and I also love traffic count. Like, I mean, traffic count people use in almost every business but laundromats. And I don't understand that. If it's a road that people are using daily... Mm-hmm. They use the stuff that's on that road. So if you have 30,000 car traffic count, that means people are driving by your store every day.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that really you look at or you look for not having?
I drive the area, and I actually go a lot by gut now too. I mean, I used to care a lot about demographics, but I mean, you have eyes. I could be driving in any city in America, and I'll be in an area and I'm like, man, this would be a good laundry area. Then usually a couple blocks later, one does show up. So a lot of people know the same formula, but
yeah. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, like I said, I used to buy laundromats. When I did buy a laundromat, you know, I cared about the demographic. I don't even check numbers now. Like, that's the truth. Mm-hmm. Like, I just bought a laundromat, 8 months ago? So 8 months ago, I bought a laundromat and it was doing shitty, but like the area said it should be doing way better. So I didn't really care what he was making. And we've already doubled the income on that store, more than doubled it. But like I said, I wasn't buying it for I was buying it for what it could be, not for what it was.
Right, right. You saw the potential in that. Well, okay. On day one, when you take over an existing store like that, what are maybe the first 2 or 3 things that you're always going to do? to bring that store up to speed as far as you feel it should be? What are the first couple things you do immediately?
So two of the three that I have taken over existing laundromats, we gutted completely. We even changed the layout. Sometimes we even added new pits. But okay. I'll actually go in there and actually completely remove everything. We changed walls. We changed layout. We changed the mix because, in my opinion, if you can't put 880s in the laundromat, it isn't worth building. So a lot of times, like, they might have 260s will be the biggest, or even 240s will be the biggest laundry equipment mm-hmm. they have in there. And I don't use top loaders. So sometimes, you know, with existing top loaders, you got to change the infrastructure because they do pump drains instead of, you know, gravity drain.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got them. Like, even the one that we bought that we didn't gut because it had quite a bit of new equipment, we still changed the layout. We added some machines. We took out some machines and we completely changed the interior. Like, completely. Like, I mean, I even get so nitpicky that if a wall's not straight, I have it tore out and we re-put it in straight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like I said, I mean, I get really fanatic-y because, like, it's the little things that people see, you know, that they process subconsciously, but they don't even maybe notice.
Right.
So, right. I mean, I wish I could show you pictures of the store. As a matter of fact, I had a manager that didn't understand what the hell we were doing. I said, just wait till it's done. And I would tell you the day he would say that was right.
Right.
Right. I said, you know.
And like you said, a lot of times it's just subliminal stuff. You don't realize, you just know that the feeling is different once you've done it, once you've made the change.
And yeah, the community loves it too. I mean, actually, if you take one that is actually pretty well attended mm-hmm. and they notice, they start telling their friend, like, that laundromat jumped up because it wasn't a zombie mat. Like, they didn't completely push all the customers out. But and the customers that were still going that probably weren't thrilled with it were probably telling their neighbors how much better it was getting.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, so, and that's even different too. You take over a zombie mat, it's got such a bad reputation. Like, and I've done it. Like, I've taken over dead laundries, and those are always harder to bring back because it just takes a longer time because people drive by it, they've already written it off, and they don't even see it anymore. So, and you don't have a good strong customer base that can spread the word of mouth. Like, you got to grow it from scratch organically,
right?
You would even
change habits.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, it is a lot easier to build a brand new store and become profitable than to take over a shitty zombie mat that has, when I'm saying the worst kind, where they have driven everybody out, the change machine robbed, 80% of machines are down. When you take over a store like that, the reputation is there and people have just written it off. Like, even if someone says get nicer, like, well, it's got to get a hell of a lot nicer. And they don't realize that you're retooling the whole thing. But I do know from experience that taking over a decent store, they usually come up really good. Taking over a crappy store, they take a year. I mean, you just got to get past that rat reputation. But when you build a new stores crapshoot. You could be, I mean, I've had them be profitable month one. I've had them be profitable in 6 months, but like, it's still faster than taking over a dirt pile.
Right. Well, when you take over an existing store, do you always switch out some equipment? Do you always upgrade equipment?
To this point, I have not used the mix on any. I always add bigger. I guess bigger, in my mind, bigger is better. So,
mm-hmm.
and matter of fact, the one that I was talking about that we doubled, I mean, it had an entire row of top loaders. And I said, that's the first thing. We're tearing that out. We can't leave it blank. So we tore all those out and put big, big equipment in.
What's your favorite aspect of the laundromat business? Apparently you like it. You've been in it a long time. You're continuing to build. What's your favorite part?
My favorite part is probably just autonomy. Like, you know, there's no one to tell me no one tells me what to do. Like, I can kind of like pull my own levers, try whatever I want to try. And if it doesn't work, reshift. I mean, it gives you freedom too. I mean, when you get to a level I am, like, you know, I went from a job running a laundromat and working a job where I work 60, 70, 80 hours a week. And now I have an excellent staff at this point. And if I want to take 2 weeks and go somewhere with my kids, like, it doesn't, I come back. I actually came back one of the Kansas City stores. I came back from vacation and I said, what do you need me to do? And they said, nothing. And I said, okay, I'm gonna go to Kansas City and buy a building. And I did. So because the realtor talked to me about a building that I want to look at, and I literally did. I mean, I came back, had nothing to do, so I did. I went to Kansas City and bought the building the next day.
Awesome. What? How much time do you spend in your stores or on your laundromat business per week, would you say, on average?
That question, I hear people answer it all the time. And the truth is, like, I come to my laundromats most every day of a five-day work week. But I would say that my primary function in this company at this point is not to run it. Like, I may not even say that there's stores I probably haven't been in for, I go months without stepping in them, but they're being ran. I mean, I can see on our profit and loss statements that the people I have are maintaining or even improving the laundries. So working in my laundries is, unless someone's on vacation, is actually becoming, I don't have any of the day to day. Everything I have is, I mean, I have a gal named Megan, which I think you were working with her. Like, she schedules me stuff that I need to be on for banks or architects or whatever. But I mean, I would say that I probably work 40 hours a week right now, but that's because I'm really pushing to expand.
Right.
That was
right.
Not the case. If I just wanted to be content with what I have, like, I could probably have 2 weekly meetings and be fine. Like, we do have a Wednesday meeting where it starts at 9 and it can go till noon or it can go till 10. I mean, it doesn't have a, we don't have a time limit on it. We don't have an agenda. It's just dealing with, like I said, we're going to have one tomorrow, and I'm guessing it's going to run long because we just got done with the one store we purchased. We got a two package deal, and now we're going to go. I mean, I don't have the personnel to do two stores at once. So we had to fix up one, and now we're going to go to the next one. And we're going to start game planning that and start putting a schedule to it and what we want to do first and how we want to attack it. And like I said, we've already purchased equipment because we will be adding equipment to that, and we'll be removing top loaders. So it will be a longer meeting on tomorrow.
But for the most part, I mean, you're saying that, you know, you've got a staff and you've got a well-trained team that you can count on. And that's kind of the key to freedom, isn't it? To entrepreneurial freedom.
It 100% is. I mean, it lets me focus on the stuff that I want to focus on instead of stuff I have to.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's your favorite aspect of the business. What about your least favorite? What do you hate about the laundry business?
I mean, if I'm being honest, it would be government. Government's always changing. They're always regulating. I mean, you have to worry about how many employees you have now because they treat you differently. If you have 39 employees versus 40 employees, like, you have all these groups that, I mean, you got to be on top of everything. Like, ADA, I mean, just because you have something 2 inches high, someone can get a government agency involved. And, like, you hate the homeless or you hate the handicap because someone accidentally put a changer 2 inches high. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I don't think anybody's out to get these people or do anything wrong. But, I mean, if you get on the wrong radar, I mean, I'm actually 6-0 fighting local and state battles. I mean, I'm fighting one. I mean, that's part of the problem in Kansas City right now is, I mean, it's like I'm in a suburb there that just seems like they don't want businesses. Like, they just don't, like, they have no idea what it takes to run a business, but they want to sit there and tell you all the shit you need to do for them. And, like, you're trying to take an old shitty eyesore for them and turning it into something nice that they can be proud of. And they want to fight you on it the whole way. And I mean, I might even get to a point where, like, I love the city of Omaha. The city of Omaha has a zoning and planning board, and it has a lot of business owners that sit on it. So, like, a lot of them understand the ways of the world, and they're not unreasonable, and you can work with them. And even if it is something, like, you can get something passed that makes sense, like, or an exception, where some cities are just so black and white, and they don't have a clue. Like, they don't even realize the detriment that they are to their own citizens. Because of the bullshit hoops that they're putting people through. So I would say that certain governments, whether it be state, local, usually not federal, but I mean, I don't understand what these people, like, they want to sit there and talk about minimum wage and all this stuff, but, like, you got everybody make money. I mean, if you can't build something cost effective or get it put in correctly, I mean, that's another thing too. I mean, it's absolutely asinine that I mean, I have a conscience, and at the end of the day, like, if somebody got hurt, like, I'd lose sleep over it. I mean, if it was something I could have prevented. So nobody's out here trying to I mean, there is people trying to cut corners. I'm not going to say there's not, but I'm saying the majority of people are trying to do things right. And there's just so much regulation. You don't even know where it's coming from. I mean, they could pass a law in Lincoln, Nebraska today that affects me tremendously. And like, I'm not a politician. I'm not a building inspector. So I don't even know about it until it becomes a problem.
Right, right. The typical small business owner is trying to help the community and provide jobs and provide services. Sometimes it feels like the cards are stacked against the business owner.
I don't even see policing. And I mean, we're in a lot of different communities. Some communities support the police and the police do their job. And some communities, the police turn their head now because they don't know what to do. So like I said, I mean, it's just gotten to be some cities enforce laws. Some are very lenient. So it's like, and then the problem is sometimes you have to deal with problems on your own and then you don't want to get in trouble, but you also don't want to let your business be overridden. So, but like I said, you got to actually, I guess, just play according to the rules in that area.
Well, with all that said, what are some of the biggest concerns you're hearing from your peers, from other laundry owners? I know you're plugged in and you're talking to store operators all across the country. What are some of the biggest concerns you're hearing right now?
I think right now, from the people that I talk to most, like we have an issue with, like, you know, commercial rates are at 9.5%. Plus, like this building I'm buying for $1.2 million in Lincoln, I would have been able to buy it probably 4 or 5 years ago for under 8. So you got the buildings increasing, and like I said, I mean, the building costs are increasing, the construction costs are increasing, and then on top of that, you know, we were paying 5.5% interest rate as a commercial rate. I mean, you could have probably got a 2.5 at your house, but anybody that's in business knows that commercial rates are never equal to like, you know, consumer residential rates. But I would just say, and like, you know, even equipment, I mean, equipment is, you know, they use the pandemic as a reason to jack equipment 30-40%. So I think it's getting to a point where, and I, like I said, I'm not against people making a profit margin, but we both know that some of these companies are publicly traded. And like I said, I won't say a thing because I don't want to get you guys in any deal. You know, I know you guys have to deal with a lot of manufacturers, but some manufacturers, if you look at their earnings reports, are making astronomical earnings. So they're actually taking advantage of low supply and how hard it was to get, you know, equipment during the pandemic. They jacked the price. They knew that there was a small supply and they hit their customer who had been their customer for a long time for quick profits instead of trying to support them. And I hope it backfires them. I hope some of these people cut relationships. So then when it's the reverse side and not everybody wants equipment and they need to sell equipment, that people don't buy from them.
Peter, what do most laundry owners get wrong?
I'd say a lot. I'd say there's a lot. That they get wrong. I would say that a lot of people probably think that they're smarter than they are. Like, I've never had that problem. Like, I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm poor at. I generally try to hire people to do the things that I'm poor at. I would also say that they get tunnel vision. They get set on something. Like, I actually bought a building in Fremont. And it was a government thing. It was a historic building. They were trying to tell me all the stuff I couldn't do. And I remember the last meeting I walked out, I called the realtor. I said, put it on the fucking market. They don't want to work with anybody. And I actually remember, like, that building, I sold it 3 years later. There still was nothing in it. And it probably changed hand 2 times. But the city is so ridiculous on it being a historic building and not change. I mean, you got to change it to make it something. I mean, if you're going to make it a restaurant, you're going to have to put ovens. You're going to have to cut holes for ranges. I mean, if you're going to make it a coffee shop, I guess it's a historic building and you want to, like, maintain the historic value of a 130-year-old building. But you got to let something happen. I mean, you can't just leave it as is and have a business in there. So, like I said, I think that a lot of people probably don't analyze themselves and know what they're good and bad at. Like I said, some people can't manage people. Some people are good with money. Some people are bad with money. And I would say that, I mean, one of my favorite things in this industry is how people always tell me I'm doing. I mean, I have managers we pay $150,000 to. And they're like, you can't afford to do that. I'm like, shit, I've been doing it for 5 years. So apparently you can. I'm like, why can't I pay it that? But I mean, they're essentially running this business. Like, I'm not paying them to manage it and come to me and ask me for every damn question. I'm paying someone that's competent enough to run their own business, but doesn't want to take the risk to do it. So I have to pay them accordingly.
Very good.
But they run it like an executive, like a CEO, like it's their own.
Right, right. Hey, when a laundromat fails, what's typically the biggest, most common reason for that failure? I mean, I'm sure you've seen it through the years.
It's location. I mean, that's okay. That's why Danny and I don't always, D'Angelo don't always get along. Like, I mean, if it's a bad location, nothing's going to happen. I mean, if you put it in a bad location or you just do, or it's not visible or it's, you know, like tucked away somewhere. I mean, even a shitty, terrible, gross laundromat that is in a tremendous location. I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Sorry, someone in the other room. I mean, I could be the greatest operator in the world with a terrible location, and I'm going to struggle to make it work. And I could be one of the worst operators in the world with an A-plus, knock it out of the park location, and it would be hard for me to fail. So I'd say, I mean, it's the old adage, location, location, location. And it's just true in the laundry industry as it is in the industry.
All right. Any other type of business? What's the biggest mistake you've ever made in this business, if you care to share?
Biggest mistake I've ever. Oh, I'll tell you another thing. You said about the concerns. I got on a sidetrack, but Wall Street. Like, I think the people are worried about Wall Street too. Like, there's a lot of these big money groups. So I don't know if you're familiar with the storage industry, but the storage industry, Wall Street got heavy into that, and they started making these big $1 billion companies and buying them up and gobbling up, and you know, like you had these mom and pops. And then they saw the money, so then they just wanted to build more and more and more. And I would say, I don't know every city in America, but like right now, you could probably get a pretty cheap storage unit in Omaha, Nebraska, because they've overbuilt. Like, I mean, there's storage units like blocks from each other. And, you know, I mean, I even saw a performer on one, because I looked at the storage industry actually prior to laundromats and now. And for me to build an $8 million storage unit for a bank performer that they actually like, the first year after spending $7 to $8 million, I would have $1 million loss. The second year, it'd be like 600, then it'd be 400, it'd be 300. It takes year five to finally be making $400,000. And when I look at that business plan, I'm like, I want to be profitable first year. And I'm like, you're telling me that I have to spend $8 million and lose probably another two to keeping it running, and then finally make $400,000 year five. I'm like I said, but it's oversaturated. I mean, it used to be you could build a storage unit and you'd be like 60-70% capacity first year. Now you're hoping for 40, 30. I mean, and like you're dropping your rates to get it stored. So like you come in and you're like renting units out for $40, but then after you get a bunch of units in there, $40 and filling up, then you're hoping those guys leave and you're jacking the rates on them to push them out because you want to get $60 and $70 and $80 and 150. Like I said, it's
right.
Like you said, and now you have these conglomerates coming in trying to do these with laundromats. And I know it's happening in different cities, like Chicago's one. But I mean, you're going to get these hedge fund managers and these money marketers. Like they think they can come in and tweak a business. And like I said, right now, I think that's what they're like. They're like trying to take it over and they're trying to buy existing locations and understand how to run it. But at some point, if they're doing well, they're going to think that they can build them. And they're going to think the more they build, the more they make. And they're not going to realize that. If eight people are all building the same area where there should be two laundromats, the math doesn't work.
Yeah, there's a tipping point, right? There's a saturation point. Right. Perfect. No, great point, Peter. I think you're trying to avoid my question about your biggest mistake.
Well, my biggest mistake actually probably happened not too long ago. I had a general contractor that We paid him everything, and we've gotten lien waivers on everything. And I mean, I think it's because he was a con man that somehow we missed not getting lien waivers, and he didn't pay any of his subs. So I think I had a $600,000 build out, and now I'm negotiating settlements in court right now for the whole amount because he didn't pay his subs. Like, I mean, I paid him. He didn't do what he was supposed to do. So I'm paying basically for a build out twice. But at this point in my life, taking a $600,000 hit is different than if I had two or three stores. I mean, we're not going anywhere. It's not going to bankrupt us. It's not, I mean, we're not really going to do anything. Like I said, I'm even buying another building going through this.
Right.
So, I mean, if this would have happened to me 5 years ago, it would have been detrimental. At this point, it's shitty. I mean, I don't like it. But I would also say probably the biggest mistake I also made was waiting too long. Like, you know, when you go to start a business, like you're waiting for something that's perfect and it's never going to be perfect. So you just got to start, you got to find some B's and start rolling, you know, like you're not going to find an A. Cause if there was an A, someone that already was doing it already got it.
Yeah. Right. Right. You can't wait for perfect. Because that's
you're not going to get perfect being new. You're not. Like I said, you don't come out, you don't step with a plate in the major leagues and hit a dinger your first at bat.
Right. Right.
I mean, it's probably happened, but
I'd say
the probability is low.
Yeah. What are your business goals for the rest of this year, and then maybe in the coming couple of years, just continue to grow, or what? Different businesses, different industries. What are you looking to do?
So I would say that I'm always looking at different businesses because it is getting harder. I would like to build 3 more laundromats this year. I actually also got something I'm doing that I've never done before. I bought dirt. So I'm actually not in a big hurry on that because I don't want to screw it up. But like, I'm going to build a building from scratch, which, like I said, I've never done. I've always bought buildings and repurposed them. So this will be a first. And I mean, there'll be some different learning curves with that. But I want to build one from scratch. And I want to put 3 in. And like I said, I count the 2 that we already bought as soon as we get this litigation done, we'll go hard on those. But the one in Lincoln will have, if I get this under contract today, which I did as soon as I drop out this check, we'll have probably 60 days due diligence, and it'll take us another 3 months to 4 months to get it built. So that one will be done. But it would be nice to have 2 more done this year, and we're already getting to the middle of the year, so I need to start huffing.
Right. Well, best of luck with those. I'm sure those will go great. Just a couple more questions, because I know you're busy, and I do appreciate your time today. Advice. What advice can you share with other laundry owners or maybe potential investors that perhaps you wish you knew when you were first getting in? What's some advice?
I'd say just jump. I mean, here's the deal. Like, I still have friends like this today. Like, I actually have friends that talk about starting a business all the time. And sometimes I actually get shitty with them. I tell them, I said, you've been talking about this for longer than I talked about starting a business. And I said, what steps have you taken? Like, what have you actually done other than fantasize and talk about it? So I would say my advice is that if you want, you're just saying getting in the business, is to start taking some steps. Like, you can't just dream about it. You can't just read about it. You're going to have to call some people. You're going to have to talk to some realtors. You're going to have to talk to some distributors. Like, I mean, it's like everybody wants to get so close to the edge, but then they don't jump. Like, getting to the close to the edge is part of it, but you got to jump. Like, no one's going to push you. You got to jump.
Right.
Like I said, I mean, that's actually probably, I mean, as my future ex-wife, but I will give her the credit that when I was talking about all these businesses, it was her that opened my eyes. She told me, she said, you've been talking about this shit for a year. She's like, either do it or stop talking about it. And I was like, and I remember, like, it was really terse. And I remember I actually retreated and went, into a different room, and I was thinking about it, but she wasn't wrong. Like I said, I mean, I didn't take it as a hurt my feelings or whatever, but I was like, I mean, she punched me in the mouth with it, and she was right. She said, you'll do something or stop talking about it.
Take action.
Yeah. So, I mean, last one. I don't want to give her any credit, but I got to.
Hey, last one for you, Peter. The secret to being a successful entrepreneur is what?
I would say the number one thing is not giving up. I mean, people look for reasons to give up, or they get knocked down and they're like, well, I tried. And I'll tell you right now, like, I don't even know. I mean, I've been knocked down so many times. You asked me to tell you about it. I can't even tell you. I mean, it's so many times. But like I said, you get knocked down, you dust up, you get a little stronger. I mean, you keep charging the hill. I mean, every time you charge the hill, you get a little bit farther up it. And I would say that's probably number one. I would say number two for me was meeting people. I mean, there's no end to people that are in the same boat as you. And like, you can talk to those people and share with those people and learn from those people, and they want to learn from you too. So if you want to be successful, talk to other successful people and try to build a model that's right for you, but using the knowledge you gain from them. And along with even meeting people, just build relationships. Like, I have group texts that go on every day with 4 other laundry owners, and they're all multi-store owners. So this is like a peer group for me. Like, and we actually, sometimes it may go 3 days and there won't be like 2 or 3 text messages, but there can literally be 100 text messages in the same day when there's a topic that a bunch of people someone brings up and they want to talk about. So, I mean, you don't have all the answers. I'd be lying if I say that I know more than probably 80% of the people in the industry do. And I say that not trying to be arrogant. It's a matter of fact, but I still have 20% I could learn. Right. So, and the industry is evolving and it's changing. So like I said, I don't even care if it comes off angry as arrogant, because it's true. Like I said, it's not bragging if you can do it. Right. So I'm just saying, but I wasn't there. And the truth is, there could be some changes that happen in this industry, or money could come in and start doing big deals and buying, you know, up big swaths of land. And then I won't know what's going on. And then I'm gonna have to learn how to adjust my tactics. And then maybe I only know 40% of what's going on. And I got to figure out who the hell does know what's going on and learn from them. Right. So, I mean, I would just say it's a snapshot in time right now. Like I might be on top now, but 10 years, there could be wild changes. And then if I'm not keeping up with it, then I'm behind.
Right. Right. Perfect. Hey, I want to give you the last word. Anything I didn't ask, anything that you would like to get out there or let people know about your journey, this industry, what's going on, anything I didn't ask?
There's not really anything I would add, but the only one, if a lot of people watch this, there is one thing I would say, just because I get it all the time. Like, I mean, you know, I did YouTube for 3 months or whatever, and I don't know, I think I have 50,000 followers, and everybody keeps asking me, when my divorce is finalized, I'll probably start up YouTube again, but it's not the best thing to do when you're going through a divorce.
A little tip. All right.
So yes, YouTube was probably coming back, but it's in the timeline. I don't know what it is. I mean, it might be 6 months. It could be. Okay. I have no idea. I mean, I've already been in this a year and a half, 4 months. I didn't think it was going to last this long. So.
Right. Perfect. Hey, Peter, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot. It's been a pleasure. I always like chatting. This has been great. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. Like I said, I like doing these. I mean, it's fun. I mean, it actually helps you kind of just reflect on your journey too. Like you don't usually think about the past. So it is nice when you do this, mm-hmm. because
it forces you to reflect, I guess, maybe.
Yeah. And sometimes you forget, right? I mean, like I even look at my first laundromat. Like I thought I did it so well. It was my biggest mistake is losing this money to this con man. So, but I almost said, you know, I built that laundromat. I thought I did everything right. I even had like $80,000 contingency that I thought that I could use, because I didn't expect it to make money, but a bunch of problems arose and that money went actually quite quickly. And I was actually using my personal bank account, like funding the laundry. And I got to a point where like, how long can I personally fund this business? And like I said, but I mean, every month it got closer and closer to revenue positive. And even I thought I was being careful, but I still wasn't careful enough to have enough reserves. But like I said, it all worked out. And then when it got going, it really got going. And then we built another one. And we've learned every single step of the way. But I mean, I sit here now thinking I've done a pretty good job, but there's definitely some stress getting here.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, absolutely. Peter, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been good. Have a good one.
Thanks for joining us on our podcast today. If you haven't done so already, please be sure to subscribe to Planet Laundry at planetlaundry.com. And don't forget to follow us on social media at Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube.